Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. Don't live your life on hold with online car insurance that's driven to save you time and money.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Marie is already on to us there in 51551. Adam and Paula, very sad but brilliant movie. That's very true. I watched it again yesterday. I'm joined in the studio by actor and writer Mark O'Halloran. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Mark, the iconic Irish movie Adam and Paul. We're celebrating 20 years. I can't believe it's been 20 years since the release.
It seems like sometimes it feels like just yesterday that it was made. And then it is also a lifetime ago. You know, it is, yeah. You know, we lost Tom Murphy straight afterwards, you know, a couple of years afterwards. So he's dead a long time. And, you know, he was very young. Like, he pretended to be much younger than he was, of course, but he was 39 when he passed away. But that now feels like just another world. But it's strange. The film still lives in lots of ways. Like I think I was just saying to you that, you know, I live in the city centre. And there's still young fellas in the local Spar shop who go, "Oh my God, it's Adam and Paul."
That's incredible, isn't it?
It's so weird. And I do you know, to be recognised after 20 years for something that you made, yeah, is lovely. It's really beautiful.
Also to look like you did 20 years ago.
Well, that's the thing.
It's the good actor's hair.
But also, no, it has to be said that I'm playing somebody who's addicted to heroin, who lives on the street in a very difficult life. So I must look absolutely wrecked,
yeah,
all the time.
Older than, yeah. So it's going to be shown as part of the upcoming Bloomsday Film Festival. We'll talk about that. And there's another short story film as well, An Encounter. But making the film and the idea that was in your head when you're writing it, I mean, what did you want to say? It was about, it's really such a Dublin film.
Yeah.
And you're a Clare man.
I'm a Clare man. But I moved to Dublin when I was about 20. Mm. And I was amazed that you could see heroin addicts on the street. Like I thought, I was living up in Parnell Street in the city centre. And I thought that was really bizarre. Like I saw a thing where I saw a young fella falling over in slow motion in the traffic island on O'Connell Street with a cigarette in one between fingers of one hand and the tip of a hypodermic needle in the
thing.
And he fell over in slow motion. It took him about 2 minutes to fall to the ground, and I was like, this is bizarre. And it felt like as if there was a slow motion, there was all these boys and girls walking around in a kind of a slow motion, and then everyone else was, you know, rapidly going about their business, and they didn't see them. And I was like, I was amazed. So I used to keep these diaries of things, and I remember at one point, I remember looking out my window, and at the time, Irish films, there was lots of Irish films that were about the national question, so it was all about like what the Brits did to us was desperate, and I was kind of going like, well, you know, I'm on the dole, I'm trying to make myself a career in acting. I don't care what the Brits did. Well, you know.
I care about today.
I care about today. And I looked out the window and I was going like, why doesn't somebody make a film like that? Like the street that I look out onto, which felt very alive and very vibrant and had lots of stories in it. And so that's kind of the germ of it.
Yeah.
And then I was lucky enough to get put together with Lenny Abrahamson, who is the very brilliant Lenny Abrahamson.
Yeah.
And the two of us, he had never made a feature film. I had never written. I remember himself and his producer, Johnny Spears. You know, I brought in these sample scenes and my idea for what Adam and Paul would be. And then they said, all right, we're going to commission you to write a script. And I remember leaving that day going like, I'm absolutely crazy. I don't know how to do this.
You've got to
do
it.
I have no idea.
So the diaries had to come out.
The diaries have to come out. And I began to, I remember the first, I sat at my desk and I was going like, how do you write, how do you start a film? So I just started with my character glued to a mattress, you know, like I had no idea what I was doing. Absolutely no idea.
Which sets a very funny tone at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's a delicate line, isn't it?
Well, it is a delicate line because you don't want to be making fun of people. But I believe that everybody's ridiculous. We're all absolutely ridiculous, stupid people. All of us. And so, you know, I believe we should laugh at ourselves. We should laugh at everybody else. But we should also care for people. So there was an idea of giving a dignity to people who were nameless in lots of ways. And there was a joke in the middle of it, like, it's called Adam Paul, but you never find out which one is Adam, which one is Paul.
And I'm sure you're Adam.
Well, now it says it in the credits.
Oh, does it? Okay.
But we laughed at the time because people would look at the credits and go like, who the hell is Mark O'Halloran and who the hell is Tom Murphy anyway? Nobody knew who we were. So they wouldn't be able to figure out. And it was a kind of a joke about, or about, I liked the idea of people leaving the film and struggling to name people that they would normally step over on the street. So that was it in its basic sense. Yeah. But I used to deliver these pages of dialogue that I'd written over to Lenny Abrahamson's house, and we'd sit around his kitchen table and we'd laugh or we'd have ideas about things, and then I'd go away and write more pages, and we gradually it all came together, and within a year we were making it, which was kind of bizarre. Like, you know, I wasn't in the film industry, you know what I mean?
Was it shot very quickly?
It was shot over a month. It was shot in November 2003, I suppose. Yeah. It was miraculous because it was a very bright month.
Yeah, but it's
absolutely freezing. Mm. So at the end, when a certain thing happens to my character, I have to lie on a beach for quite a long time.
You can see the wind.
It was so cold. It took me about a month to get over the cold of that, of lying down. But it was a very vibrant time. Making it was felt very, it was just one of those happy accidents that happen in life where you find yourself doing something really vital that you really love and that you really believe in. Because it doesn't always happen that you believe in something or that you have that same energy. And you know, we'd never talked, or, you know, Lenny and I had never talked about, like, what about the box office figures, or who are we going to show this film to? Or we had no sales agent, we had nothing. And it just kind of, it resonated with people when it came out in a kind of a way. And it had this amazing journey around the world, you know.
How did it do, can you remind us? Because it is 20 years.
Well, we did really surprisingly well at the box office in Ireland, but also within about a couple of weeks, I remember I met this young fella on Parnell Street, and he goes, "Oh, look, wait, let me show you." And he took out a DVD that had the name Adam across it, and it had been ripped off. So it was ripped off an awful lot.
It was already been pirated.
It was. Okay. It was been pirated. And I was kind of delighted with that. I was kind of going, well, you know, I don't mind as long as people get to see it. And people still watch it. I'm really, and people come up to me all the time, as I said, you know, and shout at me on the street, "I'm not wiping myself with a potato bag." and all of that.
And that is a perfect example of the delicate balance between something that was so incredibly grim, but there was a wee bit of humour there.
Yeah, well, like, we wanted to show, like, how difficult it was to live on the street and all of that. That idea that, you know, where do you go to the toilet? Yeah. Where do you find food? Where do you...
Constantly
being moved on and being hated and being spat on, basically, and all of those things. How do you deal with that and maintain a dignity within yourself? And there was a joke within it where Tom's character is afraid of the electric toilet on O'Connell Bridge, so he has to and have a shite behind a dumpster, and then he doesn't have anything to wipe his arse with, and find a potato bag in which to do it. I mean, the corporate logo or whatever of potato must have been absolutely horrified. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I noticed actually quite a few logos appearing in the...
There were more innocent times.
They were, yes.
They weren't so vetted. But yeah, it was trying to... That idea of trying to find dignity and the ridiculousness of it all at the same time.
Well, you give us sympathy, or you get the audience to be sympathetic towards Adam and Paul, but also see how brutal they can be in their search for drugs.
Yeah.
And that heartbreaking scene down the alleyway with the kid they lure from the bus stop who has Down syndrome.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that there's a shot of them when they're bringing him down the thing, and they both hold his hand. And it was like, I had been really obsessed with the Jamie Bulger case and the video of those two boys taking another boy away. And it was that kind of thing was in there, because it's a horrible thing that they do. And part of it was, that scene was probably the last scene that I wrote. And it was because we maybe had been too soft focus on them.
Yes.
And we needed to show, okay, these people are also capable of doing, as all of us are, of doing the worst.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to show that as well. And so that was, you know, it was a risk to put scenes like that in, you know, it was. But I think it was worth doing, you know.
And I think the way the camera holds on the kid crying in the alleyway, that kind of close. It's nearly a Lenny Abrahamson trademark at this stage.
Well, so the brilliance of Lenny Abrahamson. I mean, I was so lucky. And also the brilliance of Tom Murphy. I have to talk about Tom Murphy.
Of course, yeah.
You know, I wrote the part specially for Tom Murphy. And Tom and I had been going out for 8 years, and we had split up as I was writing it. So you may notice in the film, like, he gets knocked down by a moped, he gets a football in the face.
That was
an ex-boyfriend's revenge, basically. I used to ring him up and go, "Tom, I got you knocked over by a moped today," and all of that. So there was a bit of fun. But he arrived on set. Tom was the most extraordinary actor. Like, he had a type of acting that I sort of describe as being egoless. Like, it wasn't drawing attention to itself because I'm brilliant. Mm. It was just because he was the character. And he was that character. He arrived to us on the first day, like, and he just looked a mess.
Ready-made.
And he was a posh kid, really, you know. There's a scene in it where everybody's in the park and he gets the football in the face and then he unzips his jacket and he goes, "I'm sweating." And it still makes me laugh. It's just so funny. And I remember we took the film to the Berlin Film Festival and there was some press wanted to interview people. And Tom was just so shy. He didn't want anything to do with that. He went to the premiere and then he disappeared that evening. It was like, "No, I don't. He was just too shy." And he was a lovely, lovely man.
Frank from Newcastle West has texted saying, "Tom Murphy was a wonderful actor whose star shone brightly for those like me who were fortunate enough to see him on the stage during his all too brief career. What happened to him?"
He got, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma?
Yeah.
And he was diagnosed and dead, I suppose, within 6 months. It was very, very quick, yeah.
He didn't make it to 40. I think he was 39, something like
that. Yeah, I mean, I used to joke with him that he would do anything not to get to 40, but in a dark way. But yeah, it was a shock for all of us. And also, it was as I get older, and like, I miss him every day, I think about him every day. As I get older and I move farther away, I think of all the work that he would have done, because I think he would have done I think the performance in Adam Paul is one of the greatest Irish performances.
Yeah. Both of you, yeah. It's incredible.
I wouldn't put myself in the same league as him, actually. I think
Don't even take my word for it. There was loads of the film reviews all said.
They were very nice to us.
The whole movie is carried by these two amazing performances. Particularly, British film critics in particular.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they look down their nose at Irish films.
They do
in
a
that
bit.
Era in particular.
They do a bit. And it was when I arrived on set and Tom was so kind of there, I was like, "Oh my God, I better up my game here." And he upped all our games. And actually, it was a weird confluence because Lenny was also brilliant. So he upped the game. And I think I brought a good script to them. So that upped the game around. Yeah. We kind of upped each other's games, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
No, it does. Actually, I'm going to play a clip here. It's a long enough one, but they're coming into the flat and the door is slightly ajar. And they start to wonder what they can do in the flat, and it doesn't take them long to figure out.
"God, that telly's nice."
"You think?"
"It is."
"Yeah."
"It's a good picture, isn't it?"
"Clear."
"It's like looking out a window, isn't it?"
"It is, yeah. Except it's cartoons."
"Yeah. The old place is spotless too."
"Lovely."
"Yeah, crazy."
"What?"
"Spending all your money on your flat."
"Do you think?"
"Yeah. Only gets robbed in the end."
"I suppose."
"Definitely. So that telly's worth money."
"For you, Bob."
Asking. "A bit heavy though."
"No way."
"Do you think?"
"Yeah. Lift it with me. Come on. See?
Yeah, it's right, love."
"Yeah, easy still."
"Yeah, easy. Just ask him to be robbed, so."
"Ask."
"Ask him."
I just love the idea that they convince themselves that the television itself has asked to be robbed.
Yeah.
That they can't take the... Because they are going in to steal the television from their girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. And who has her life together.
But they can't accept responsibility. So they find a way of not accepting responsibility by blaming the television.
There's loads more, lots of reaction coming in, actually. And we'll come to that in a second, because there's so much about the movie. It's 20 years old that resonates today. So we'll have a chat with Mark Holland. We'll stay with us. We're going to take a quick break.
Email oliver@rte.ie.
Five one is on the text. This one says, Mark O'Halloran, he's a brilliant writer, and the film Adam and Paul could be set today. We landed back from holiday yesterday. Crossing O'Connell Street was doomsday. Bleak. And congratulations on the 20 years, Mark.
Thanking you.
It is quite similar because there is homelessness, poverty, addiction. There's even xenophobia because they sit next to a bench and he's from Bulgaria.
He's from Bulgaria.
Which was the obsession with Eastern Europe we had at the time.
Yes.
We had a whole referendum to strip birthrights from people in the middle of the boom. That commentary that you're talking about Dublin then, does that feel like the Dublin you know today? Because you live in around Dublin 8 somewhere.
I live in Dublin 8. Yeah, I mean, Dublin hasn't changed that much. You know, there's a lot of change, a lot of building and all of that. There's a demographic change, which I think is fantastic. But the streets feel the same, you know, and O'Connell Street.
Are they safe?
I mean, I walk the city all the time, so I have never encountered, you know, but you know, you have to be careful in any city you go around. Yeah. You know, if you see some yahoos around, you cross the street, that kind of thing. But I love the city. I absolutely love Dublin. I still love Dublin. I'm not ever going to move from Dublin. I find there's a vibrancy here. There is a kindness here as well as a kind of a difficulties and all of that that goes on with every major city. But there is a genuine kindness that I like. There's an ability to speak to people. You know, people talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. And
you don't feel that elsewhere?
I don't feel it elsewhere. You know, I lived in London a lot last year and I love London and it's great, but it doesn't have that same connection thing.
It's very severe, isn't it?
It can be, yeah. It can be. I mean, I was living up in Stoke Newington, so it's really left field, you know, so it's kind of like everyone's having their, I don't know, their tofu and their this, that and the other. But it's still... when I got back to Dublin, I was like, oh, this is great. I'm back. I love it. And I love walking the city. I walk the city every single day. Like I walk. And O'Connell Street, people seem to be surprised by O'Connell Street. O'Connell Street's been like this, like for 30, 40 years. Like it's always been like this.
Nearly everyone's living memory.
And it's kind of hilarious when you go up there. Like it's a fantastically beautiful street. But it's full of dereliction. There's a big, massive hole up the top of it that they haven't ever filled and put down anything with. And everyone's surprised. But it also has, like, it's a very interesting street to walk around if you're a writer or if you're into listening to stories or seeing people. It's a great place.
Full of car. You see the world slightly differently, I think.
Maybe. Well, I'm always looking for stories, you know, that's how I make my living. So like,
and is it because you're looking at it at the sort of character level of individuals rather than taking the broad look and saying, this place is filthy, probably full of crime, it's dangerous, there was a riot here, I don't like it?
Well, the day after the riot, I went into the city centre, and I was in the city centre when I felt that there was things kicking off, and I went back to my flat. And then the next morning I went in very early into O'Connell Street to see it, because that is now part of our history, and I wanted to feel what it was like on the street and the temperature of all of that, and to hear stories and to talk to people. And it was that particular incident was particularly shocking and all of that.
Yeah.
And I think it shocked a lot of people.
But the city came back to itself.
It did,
quite quickly, didn't it?
Yeah, like that evening I remember, you know, I got a lot of text messages from people of colour maybe that I know that are friends of mine who are frightened and everything like that. And I think a lot of people like me did get messages like that, and they were suddenly, I think everybody was suddenly then angry, like, no, you don't do that.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
It was also just such a visceral example of the racism that we'd been talking about. Just sort of shot to the... It was such a visual experience around the world, showing this is not really the Ireland of 100,000 welcomes after all.
Yes, that was that. That's 100,000 welcomes without the window. But I do still believe that it's a welcoming country. I do believe that we are... I mean, I love the way that we're able to speak to each other and speak, like in cafes, to complete strangers, or speaking to your local taxi driver or any of that. I just love all of that.
Yeah. Well, you can't on one hand say... we have too many people now in the country. We'll pause immigration and then also cheer on, you know, the likes of Rashida Adeleke, born and bred in Tala. Fabulous. The new Irish.
Fabulous.
So you lose your right to cheer on those Irish athletes.
Look, there will always be naysayers and cranks and all of that, and that's there. Mm. But I think that the solid middle ground, or more than the middle ground, the vast majority of Irish people are decent, and that's why I live here. Because, you know, I could have moved away.
I should chat to you more often. You're very, very optimistic.
I despair.
I think the West of Ireland would have.
But, you know, I think I do believe that, you know. Yeah. And
you do. I can hear it. Yeah. You still have the lovely soft West of Ireland lilt, by the way.
You know, it changes every so often. When I'm on the phone to my mother, it's much heavier. That's all I know. Hello, how are you, man?
Pure Claire. Great to hear Mark on the radio. He was brilliant recently. Mary and George playing Francis Bacon. Sir Francis Bacon.
Sir Francis Bacon.
Did you enjoy the experience of historical drama? Says this. This is more raunchy period drama on television.
No, I didn't get my raunch on, as they'd say. They didn't want to see me with my raunch on. Getting into work every day. First of all, you're working with Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galstein and all of those lovely, fantastic people, Tony Curran. And they give you ruffs and pantaloons and tights.
It's like a long ordeal.
Like this is, it's a long way from Adam and Paul when you're tying the ribbons on your shoes. But it was absolutely joyous. And I, especially working with Julianne Moore, it was like, this was just this mad, mad dream.
Did you get chatting to her?
I did. I chatted to her quite a bit. She came in to me one day and she said, Mark O'Halloran, I had a dream about you last night. And I absolutely nearly fell off the chair and died. And I said to her, Julianne, you can't say things like that to an elderly homosexual like me. It's too much. It's too much. But she was great fun. And she made, you know, because she's a really, 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 really big star. And she can set the tone on a set.
Is that right?
And but she's very kind and open, and this fun and frolics going on before she goes, and then she's really serious about her work.
Go away.
And I thought I had a brilliant 6 months filming that.
There's the headstone sorted now, Mark. Julianne Moore once had a dream
about him. She said I was in bed with some platonically with some Irish friend of hers in New York.
Oh right, well, yeah. That's interesting.
Isn't it interesting that she said the way the you details. Worm your no. way into celebrities' minds?
Come here. Is making period drama, is that like being on set at 3 o'clock in the morning, hair, makeup, and then taking the entire day to set up a 2 minute thing?
Well, not really. This set moved quite quickly, but what was amazing was I hadn't really been on a set that had a huge budget.
Yes,
okay. And I suddenly arrived, and there was hundreds of people.
And your every need.
Stately homes and these crane shots and everything. It was just extraordinary. You could get a taste for it, which is unfortunate because they like haven't run me in a while. But it's, it was a great, great, great experience.
You'll do more of that. Yeah,
oh, sure. I'd do more of that in the morning.
The Bloomsday Film Festival, it's at various Dublin venues, 12th to the 16th of June. So that's when, and they've chosen Adam and Paul because it's the 24-hour thing, isn't it?
Well, first of all, there's two things. Like the film will be preceded by a half an hour short film that I wrote that Kelly Campbell made called An Encounter, which is an adaptation of the Joyce short story.
Yes.
And the Joyce short story had an impact on the making of Adam and Paul as well, as well as Ulysses, that idea of a day in the city and the walking around the city and all of that. I didn't go after the Joycean language or anything like that,
no.
But there are echoes of it in there. And but with the adaptation, it is a Joyce short story, and it is like a sister piece to Adam and Paul.
Yeah,
it's two young fellas ditching off from school.
All right.
And going on a wander in the city, and then they meet a creepy man at the end.
Well, that's right on point with school aversion, school avoidance, and all that.
Yep.
At the minute. So that's a short film, and will we be able to see that then elsewhere?
Has been at festivals all over the world and has won loads of prizes. And Kelly Campbell did an absolutely fantastic job on the making of it. It's a really lovely piece, actually.
Mm. What are you going to do? What are you working on at the moment?
I'm adapting lots of novels. So I'm adapting a John Boyne novel, The Heart's Invisible Furies.
Oh, yes, I've heard about this.
For television. Now, we haven't been given the green light yet, but we're all living in hope. It would just take a big budget and all of that sort of thing. So
Ridley Scott was rumoured to be involved at one point.
Yes,
I think
so it's not for Ridley Scott. It's for a Disney company in the United States that were writing it. So that would be great if it happened. We'll have the nation cross their fingers for
me. Would that be a movie or a series?
It'll be a series. series.
Yeah, it'd have to be because it's
a, and it's a book that people really love, and it's a joy to be working on. And then I have a couple of films that hopefully will get made, that are scripts that I've written in the next, one would go into production now hopefully at the end of the year, and the other in maybe late spring next year.
You're very kind of calm about it. You just like to float here and there.
These things happen or they don't happen. That's the way I look at it. And all of, my job is just to sit at home and type. and at the moment I'm making I'm actually acting in a four-part TV show called Mixtape, which is for an Australian TV company, and Jim Sturgis is in it.
Oh, yes, I have heard about this.
Teresa Palmer. Yeah. It's really sweet and lovely.
It's a Joe Spain.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And the scripts are absolutely divine. Divine. And I play a lad from Sheffield.
Very good. That was my Sheffield accent.
Yeah, good at the accent. Well, there's an accent coach there who helps you.
Really?
So when doing Sir Francis Bacon, there was somebody there as well to teach me to do the posh English. So that was...
What is their hot tip? What's the takeaway from that?
The R's. So, like, for instance, I had to say one day, this is war. And I put on the R at the end. So I said, this is war. And so you suddenly sound Irish.
You drop that completely. It's
so you have to drop that, and they'd come up to you and go,
you put an H in there.
Could you clip? Yeah, that kind of thing.
It's war. That's the tip of the day. Loads of nice compliments coming into you. I have to give this to you because your ego is too small. You need to flame it up. OMG, please ask Mark to go straight into politics. He's so positive and upbeat. I love it. It's so refreshing. Great to hear positivity, says Moira in Cork. You have no interest in politics.
I have no interest in politics whatsoever.
Amazing listening to Mark. One, if not the most effortlessly handsome men in Irish theatre. Beaut.
I completely agree. I'm available for dates. That's all I'm saying.
We can't give out the number because of GDPR. What we can tell you is that the Bloomsday Film Festival runs at various Dublin places, including the IFI, I presume, which is where Mark Holler and Shirley lives half the time, from the 12th to the 16th of June, obviously. And
Adam Ball is the 16th, so.
16th on Bloomsday itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Mark O'Halloran, it's been a pleasure. Thanks
so
much.
Pleasure. Thank you for having
me. And enjoy yourself in the English accent.
I'll do my best.
51551 is the text. More
from the North text studio, followed by your message to 80889.